Hey everybody, I am the Canine Diva, and this is my very first podcast. Yay! The crowd goes wild! Ooh. Anyway, it's been a long time in the making. I actually announced that I would be doing a podcast months ago, and life happened, and I got behind, and so many projects I was working on at the same time. So finally, the time has arrived for me to do my very first podcast. Now, I was trying to decide on who should be my very first guest. I just thought of all these different people. And then finally, I landed on me. Yeah, I figure that, you know, I do have, you know, a nice set of followers who do know me and know my background, but I hope to meet a whole lot of other new people and bring a whole lot of other people into the Canine Diva world. So I thought that no better first guest than me, right? So let me tell you a little bit about myself. For those of you who may not be familiar, my name is actually Laurie C. Williams. I put that C in there because, believe it or not, there Laurie Williams is a fairly common name. Anyway, Laurie C. Williams, I have been a dog trainer for over 35 years. I know I started when I was a little baby, a little wee baby. But I was an adult. I've been in the industry that long. Therefore, I have a really unique perspective because I have seen this industry start from where it really wasn't an industry at all. It was just people who liked to train dogs, mainly people who, there was a set of people that were in the military and were training military dogs because they've been around for a long, long time. And then there were those of us who came up through the kennel club system, which is, yeah, there's a whole world out there of dog sports. A lot of people are familiar with the confirmation dog shows, you know, like the Westminster type of dog shows. Well, those shows are run by clubs in the American Kennel Club. Actually, Westminster is the second oldest sporting event out of all sports. First being the Kentucky Derby. So the Westminster Kennel Club that everybody kind of knows about and watches on television has been around for a long, long time. People have been showing and exhibiting dogs for really over a century. So the kennel clubs are the ones that run that. And then it's not just confirmation dog shows. When I started out, there was obedience trials, competitive obedience, and also tracking. And I believe Earth Dog was around then or might have come up shortly thereafter. Now, today, there's hundreds of dog sports, literally. So many different dog sports and activities that you can participate in with your dog. So the kennel clubs are the ones who run those shows. Kennel clubs, because like the Westminster Dog Show, that's run by the Westminster Kennel Club, which is in New York. Kennel clubs are really just a group of people that they call themselves dog fanciers, and they love dogs and they love the sport of dogs. Now, it was strictly for purebreds for many, many years, but you guys and everybody will be happy to know that it is open up to any breed of dog, mixed breeds, the designer breeds, whatever you want to call hybrids, all breeds can participate in the dog sports. Okay. So that's the way those are the people who pretty much ran dog training. They offered training classes to the community. That's how I started. Like I said, over 35 years ago, our local kennel club was holding a class at the community center. I paid probably $20, $25 for an 8-week class. And that, you guys, is where and when I got started. And that was in the early 1980s. Yeah. I was a young mom. We had a brand new Irish setter and I wanted to train him. I was very interested in learning how to train this dog. And I went to the kennel club meeting, and then this is the part that got me. After the kennel club meeting, I stayed after and just were watching some of the club members working with their dogs. They had an upcoming obedience trial, and lo and behold, I watched what they were doing with those dogs, and they were able to get those dogs to do, and I was gobsmacked, really. I was, as the kids say today, shooketh, all right? It was amazing. And right then and there, I vowed that I would be able to, I wanted to teach my dog to do those things. Because they were doing like going over jumps and retrieves and doing scent articles, scent detection. I wanted to do all of that. So that's where I started. I kept staying after and hanging around. And then eventually I joined the Kennel Club, helped them start teaching classes. And the rest, as they say, is history. So that's how I got my start. Now today, a lot of people get starts a lot of different ways. In fact, very few people start in that way anymore. But yeah, that's how long I've been doing this. And that's what got me excited about dogs. Well, let's fast forward it about from when I started to about, give or take, I'll say 10 years or so, about 10 years into it or so, I was training my Dalmatian Tucker for an upcoming obedience trial. And he was in there complete with his choke chain, because that's what we used back then. The tool of choice were choke chains, which were slip collars, basically, but they were made out of a chain material. So he was in there with me. And a woman walked up to me, and she said, you know, she was watching us for a while. I think we were doing stays or maybe recalls in the aisle of a big box store. I'm not going to name it, because you know what? I don't want to give them publicity, but also, yeah, they'd have to pay me before I mention them. So anyway, a big box store, suffice to say. And I was in the aisle, and we were doing, like I said, stays or recall. And Tucker was, first of all, he was beautiful, Dalmatian, gorgeous, long neck, very regal, very refined, and also a very good dog. So he was doing his stay, right? And I had a woman admiring us. She was like smiling, and I would often have people, because I would go there to train, because like I didn't really have anywhere to train at that time. We had moved, and I was not in an area that had the type of training classes and club like I was used to. At any rate, so I often had people standing by watching us and admiring us. And this woman, she finally walked over to me and she said, "Lovely dog." She said, "I can tell you guys have a great relationship." She said, "Really good training." Because let me just say a caveat here. Though we used choke chains, and yes, we did leash corrections, absolutely, 100%. You know, little pops on the leash. When the dog did not comply or when they weren't following directions. And yeah, that's what we did. But I'm going to tell you right now, and as we get into this later podcast where we'll focus more on training, because tonight's not going to be about training, but let me not jump ahead. We were not doing the egregious things that I see being done to dogs today. We were not doing that. And actually, I will say, prong collars have not come onto the scene yet. And certainly e-collars were not mainstream to the extent that they are today. They are very mainstream where you can get them online. Anybody can get them. Anybody can. No. They were called shot collars back then. And they were available, really mostly only people who did field work use them. So I had heard about them, but we did not use, those were not the tools of the day. It was that choke chain, but still it was compulsion dog training because we were adding corrections. Now I don't know that I would necessarily call it compulsion. I'm going to call it traditional dog training at that time. Although there were people that did compulsion where they went over the top, hanging dogs and all that kind of craziness, which, like I said, we're not going to talk about tonight. We will though. But yeah, it was mostly just leash corrections is what we were doing. All right, so I digress. Let me get back to the point. The woman walked up to me and she admired. She said, "Have you ever heard about clicker training?" And I said, "No, I had what clicker? What? What are you talking about? I had never heard about clicker training." So she told me about this. She told me about the clicker. She told me about Karen Pryor's book, "Don't Shoot the Dog." And she said, you know what? You're such a great trainer. She said, I think you'll like it. Why don't you check it out and see if you like it? So of course I wanted to check it out. So that was my, you guys, that one encounter, that one very pleasant encounter with a woman who I did not know. I still to this day do not know what her name was and who she was. I never really saw her again. I wish I did, because I would love to thank her. But it was that one encounter that prompted me to learn more about clicker training, which I then went on to learn about operant conditioning, which I then went on to learn about what we call back then positive reinforcement training. We sometimes called it dog-friendly training. We had names for it. Today, they call it force-free training. So the names have changed, but the philosophy that you should train, or you should strive to train as humanely, as fair, as kind, as patient as possible. Right? That's been the resounding theme throughout, despite what it's called. So today, which is what we're going to talk about today, it is called force-free training. And this podcast is about, does force-free trainer need a makeover? All right? That's what we're going to talk about today. Now, I'm asking this because I get asked that question all the time. What do I think about the image of force-free training in today's world, and specifically on social media? So, what comes to mind? So, this is a question I'm going to pose to all of you who are watching this podcast. What comes to mind when you think the word force-free dog training? Does it conjure positive images for you? Does it conjure negative images to you? Now, what I'm hoping, I am really hoping that this podcast appeals to all people. That is what I strive, because my goal is not to preach to the choir. My goal has always been to reach the most diverse population I can, disseminate information, and people receive it as they wish, okay? So that is what I'm striving for. So my question to you, again, when you think about the force-free dog trainers that you see on social media today, does it bring up positive images? Does it bring up images that these are people that make me want to learn more? These are people that seem welcoming. These are people that seem approachable. These are people that seem kind and nice, just like the philosophy of force-free training is. Does it seem that way? Or do these seem like people that you don't want to know? Does this seem like people that give you the ick, as they say? Are these people that repel you? Are these people that scare you? Are these people that seem like nice guys or bullies? These are questions I'm asking you, because what I think doesn't really matter. It is what you think. It is what the public thinks. And because I want this podcast to appeal to not only dog trainers, but just regular, everyday, average dog owner and guardians, okay? I want it to appeal to everybody so that we can all come together and discuss things, right? So think about that, because it really does depend on who you ask. Now, from what I have gathered from a lot of dog owners and guardians out there, first off, let me just say this, that most dog owners and guardians I meet don't even know what force-free dog training is. Like, what does that mean exactly? Well, unfortunately, like I said, it can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But in the end, it does mean a rewards-based training philosophy where the focus is going to be on teaching dogs and showing dogs what the behaviors that we want them to do, and then reinforcing it over and over and over and over and over again so they repeat it, as opposed to teaching them what we want them to do by way of correcting and punishing them for not doing it things. So that's kind of, you know, your dime store version of what it is. But actually, it's much more complex than that. But in a nutshell, that's what it is. That you're shooting for reinforcing good behaviors over and over again. Reinforcing, building up a really, really, really long and strong period of or history of reinforcement. As opposed to sit, they don't do it. Pop them and, you know, give them a correction, a leash correction to get them to sit. They're not following, they're not walking properly, pull them back or make a quick turn so they get an abrupt thing, or letting them feel that leash pressure so that they want to, like, they don't want that pressure to be relieved, so they move a little bit closer to you. So those are just some, again, some quick examples of the philosophy behind it. But do people know that just by hearing force-free? No. I mean, it can, a lot of things can come to your mind. I don't think people know what balanced training really is either, but it sounds good, right? It's kind of like, and this I will say, you know, it's kind of like, I remember when I had just moved. So I live in Virginia, not too far from Washington, D.C. So when I moved to this area, I thought I would get a job working for PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, right? So again, this was back in the 1980s. Not a lot was known about PETA back then, but I heard the word, the name of the organization, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Sounds fabulous, right? Like, who would not want, what animal lover would not want to work for an organization like that? Come to find out, they didn't want anybody like me because I show dogs. I went for an interview and I was talking about all my show dogs and did not know I was talking myself out of a job. You know, I thought it was great and never got a call. And then when I did more research on the organization, I found out they do not like dog training. Yeah, they don't like dog training either. And they definitely don't like showing dogs, right? So anyway, just suffice to say, words, when you don't know what they mean, labels can be deceiving, right? So I particularly don't love labels. I don't like them. As an African-American, I don't like being pigeonholed into thinking that, you know, I belong to a community that is completely monolithic. I belong to a community, absolutely, 100%. But we're not a monolith. You know, we all are individuals. We think differently. Well, the same thing about dog trainers, no matter what your philosophy is, you're going to be individuals within that philosophy and you're going to think different. So back to that word, force-free. What image does that conjure for you? Now, I will say that I just recently did this talk at a meeting of dog trainers, a conference. And it was a conference that was all pretty much force-free dog trainers, or that's the who ran the conference, okay? So my opener was, what is the image of a force-free dog trainer? And then I told them, look around the room. And I want to say there was probably maybe 50-ish people in that room, maybe a little bit more, give or take. And there were three persons of color out of them. So I said, take a look around. What do you think is the image of force-free dog trainers that we are putting out into the world? And they looked around Right away. I heard some people say middle-aged white woman. They put the middle age in there, not me. But it was a range of age. I'd say, you know, anywhere from mid-20s to, like, you know, 40s, 50-year-old. Yeah, primarily white women. There was a few men, sprinkling of men. Like I said, three persons of color that I could see. My point is, that's the image. Now, does that mean that, oh, you know, only white people have access to training dogs with positive and rewards-based methods? No, it does not mean that. What it means is that is what is being shown for whatever reason on social media. Absolutely. So that is why, in my opinion, if our goal as rewards-based trainers, if our goal is to attract more people to learn more about rewards-based training, if that's our goal, then it behooves us to reach beyond that and to be welcoming enough in our language, because that's what is going to be what people are listening to, right? Our language and our actions that show that that's what we want. We want to widen it. We want to help people. We want to educate. We want to be open. We want to be approachable. We want to be accessible, right? Because we are looking for inclusion and diversity. Those two words that have turned into something very negative in this political climate. I'm not gonna go there tonight. I probably will in a future podcast. So at any rate, that's what we need to think about when we talk about the image. Now, right now, and I hope to get this podcast out to you guys quickly, because right now we're going through something right now in the dog training industry, particularly on social media. This is a social media thing. But right now we are going through something that we've gone through it before, but this one's sustaining a little bit longer than past ones have. This one sounds like it isn't going away. This one sounds like it's going to be here for a while. And the reason that it's that way is because it is being led by people that have a very, very specific agenda and very, very specific personality traits that it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon. So it is up to us within the industry to try to move it to where we would like it to be. And as I said, for us in the rewards-based training, and I think the traditional training world, aka balance world, probably want this too. We want for the consumer to get the information that they need so that they can make an educated choice on how they want to train their dog. Because at the end of the day, it is up to the individual owner guardian to make that choice. It is not up to us as dog trainers to make that choice for them. All right. And it is also not up to us to bully them one way or the other and not to mislead them one way or the other. Okay. That's not our job. And actually, that to me would be malpractice for you to be doing that. All right. So everybody needs to ask themselves, what do we feel that we can put out there or not put out there to foster spreading the education and being approachable and welcoming to the general dog owning public. How do we do that? Well, for one, ask yourself, those of you who are on social media and are putting out content, is your content 90% picking on other trainers, calling out other trainers, saying how awful this trainer is and that trainer isn't. Oh, you shouldn't be doing that. Oh my gosh, that's abusive. Oh no, no, that is bad, 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 bad. Is that what 90%? Or let me even say, maybe not 90%, 75, okay? 60, more than half. Is most of your content that telling people what is bad, abusive, horrible, you shouldn't do this, you're a bad person if you do this, they're a bad trainer, horrible, horrible, horrible. Is that most of your content? Or is most of your content actually showing people what to do? Because you know what's interesting? As a rewards-based trainer, that is one of my resounding themes that I tell my clients and students, that when you are training your dog, you should be telling your dog what to do as opposed to punishing them to not do something or teaching them not to do something. Teach them what to do. We say that to our clients and students. And then we turn right around, get on the internet, and do the exact opposite ourselves. Bad, 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 wrong, 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 abusive, abusive, abusive. Stop doing that. That's a bad person, bad trainer. Terrible, terrible. Whereas we should be doing, this is something that you can do with your dog for, you know, to get better attention and focus. This is what you can do with your dog to get some great leash skills. Here's the way you can, you know, teach your dog to believe it in a several different ways. That's what we should be doing. Show. If you have here's one. If you have a dog that's reactive, oh, terrible, don't do this, don't do that, don't use this tool, don't use that tool, stop doing that. Terrible, abusive, 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 abusive. Or if you have a reactive dog, this is what you can do. Do this, do this, do this, do this. I've had a lot of success with this. That's one thing, right? You know, you have to, and that is a criticism that the rewards-based training side gets a lot by the balance. And I have to agree with them there because I do see a lot less actual showing the application of positive reinforcement and rewards-based. We need to show because, like I said, people don't know what it is. People just think that it's giving dogs treats and they just think it's bribing dogs because that's what they think. They don't think it's reinforcement. They think it's bribing. So we have to show them how it's done correctly. If we don't, who's going to show them that? Right? So that's the number one is how many trainers who don't train like you actually follow you. Take a look at your follow list. Is it all other force-free or rewards-based trainers? Or do you have some traditional, /balanced trainers that follow you also? Now, if you have only force-free, rewards-based trainers following you, that is something that's called preaching to the choir. That's what that's called. And I suspect that you probably don't have a lot of followers, which is not the goal. It's never quantity. It's not what we should really be shooting for. But you're just telling the same people who are already doing what you're doing, you're telling them over and over and is recycling it over and over again. Again, nothing wrong with that. But think about, again, what your goal is. If your goal is reaching outside of that, then you need to ask yourself if there's something that you're doing that is keeping you in that preaching to the choir space. Is there a reason for that? I suspect there probably is that you may not even know about. It could be in your language, which we'll get into a little bit more later. But yeah, so you have to really do some self-reflection. And why am I only getting here? So there are ways that you, are you saying things, like I said, that are repelling people? So here's what I do. Now, I do have an advantage, I think, from the average, like I said, force free trainer, who's that 30, 40 something year old white woman. Obviously, that's not me. So one time I have a little bit of privilege, but I'd probably extend farther than that just by virtue of who I am, right? But you know what? It's not only that. I have conversations with balanced trainers. right? I have conversations with people all the time. All the time. I'm a, what's called a crossover trainer. Like I said, I started training 35 years ago. So 35 to go, we didn't train the way I train today. That's for doggone sure. So I have friends who may not have evolved or have may not have gotten as far into the reward space as I have, what I'm supposed to cut them off. No, they're my friends. And I happen to believe that people will evolve in their own time. And that's okay. That's the way the world works, right? So guess what, though? I want to be that person who came up to me in the big box store. That's who I strive to be. Wow, really good training. Which brings me up to another point. Do you ever see someone that may be in the balanced training world, and you see some good stuff they're doing? Follow them, because I'm sure not everything they do involves a tool. Not everything they do involves correction and punishment. If they're a good trainer, efficient, good, excellent dog trainer, then they're doing a lot of positive reinforcement. Follow them. What's going to happen if you follow them? Follow them. Tell them when you think they did something awesome, because that opens the door to communication. That opens the door for them to watch you. Because you know what, you guys, if people aren't watching us, they're not learning from us. For me, you know, don't get me wrong. I love my force-free followers. Love you guys, right? I love having the young trainers that coming up that are following me. I love that. I love you guys. But I really love to have traditional and balanced trainers follow me. I absolutely love that. Because you know what? They're listening. They're watching. I'm watching them. They're watching me. We're watching each other. Okay? We're learning. And you want, that's the first step in education. That is the first step in moving things along. All right? So you got to have the conversation. And most importantly, you know, something I do want to tell you too, that there are only 8 to 10% of the United States, in the United States, 8 to 10% of the dog owners and guardians, people who own at least one dog, 8 to 10%, only 8 to 10% participate in any type of professional dog training. So social media is going to be some of some people's only encounter with a professional dog trainer. So because there are fewer of us in the rewards-based space, it behooves us to be welcoming, to be open and approachable, and to not repel people, not give people the ick, not look like bullies, not look like know-it-alls, not look like we think we know everything, not think that everything rests on what we say, all right? That's just not a good look, as they say. Now, another thing, are you a bandwagon jumper? Do you jump in with the mob and the mob, the mentality of a mob? Because that's what's happening right now in the dog training industry. There is a very strong mob element in the force-free space, unfortunately, that is pretty much going after people and attacking people. Now, listen, let me be clear here. I am not talking about if a dog trainer is being out and out abusive, where there are videos of them stringing dogs up and swinging them around and all kinds of physical abuse. That definitely is something that should be called out at the highest. Certainly, I think everybody agrees with that. Guess what? Balanced, good balanced trainers agree with that as well. Absolutely. 100%. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about almost like a McCarthyism going after other dog trainers that are even in the rewards-based space because they are having a conversation with someone that they don't want them to have. You know, a interpolicing, if you will. It's almost very similar to what is happening in our political climate, really. It is almost like it's uncanny how similar it is to a charismatic leader coming on the scene that is telling people, oh, the crisis, there's a crisis in dog training. There's a crisis. We need to, you know, if everything's so negative, but then they're in the force-free space. How does that work? That's a little strange. Makes you go, But yeah, it's very eerie and scary. But anyway, the thing is, it's mob mentality, guys, and that never goes well. Because let me give you a little example of something that I saw happen recently. There was this company, and again, I'm not going to mention names because there's no reason to. But there was this company that makes a really cool, very cool product that is used by a lot of dog trainers. Dog trainers in the positive reinforcement reward space, as well as in the traditional and balance space. So it was this product. And then, like I said, this mob decided, hey, that product that we are always telling people to use, and like I said, force-free mob, they just focused on this balance trainer, and we don't like that. So we need to start bombarding them with I don't know if they did an email thing. That emails would have been fine, I think. But no, they went on the page, the company page, whatever. I don't know if it was their social media page. Yeah. And they just were posted like terrible. Oh, you guys are awful. And I can't believe you're endorsing this person and blah, 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 blah. And tons of posts were piling in. And guess what? It completely backfired. Because you know what? That mob looked like a bunch of bullies. So everyday average John Q, dog owner guardian, saw that. And they're like, ugh, those people are a little bit unhinged. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Who are those people? Force-free dog trainers. That probably set back force-free at least a couple of years as far as the image goes. Terrible. Backfired so bad. Nobody likes a bully. And you know what? When you bully companies like that, you end up looking like not only bullies, but they become martyrs and they become the underdog. And you actually rally people in their defense. That's what happened with this. What should have been done was a more professional email or even a petition that was submitted to the company in a professional way, Number one, that wouldn't have had you people looking like savages, looking like they're completely out of control, unhinged. All right. Wouldn't have people looking like that. And it wouldn't have had the general public rally behind the company. So backfired just because of not thinking, not controlling, being unhinged. Okay. So are you a part of that? Not a good look. You're setting rewards-based trading back because nobody likes a bully. Nobody. So if those are some things that you can do that you can completely help not tarnish the image of force-free dog training, rewards-based dog training, put out good content that will help people, put out educational content. So that is what I came here today to do and to introduce myself and talk about the image of force-free trading. Now, I am going to continue with this topic probably for my next podcast, but that time I'm going to get some guests in here and we can kind of have a little round table and talk about it a little bit more. So I want to thank you guys for joining me for my inaugural podcast. I hope to do many, many, many more in the future. And I'm going to, you know, do what I do to get this out to you all and let this simmer for a bit. Probably will do my next one within, the next week or two. And I want to be able to keep going. So definitely let me know in the comments what you thought. You can reach me on my socials at the K9 Diva. That is my tag on Instagram, on TikTok. And then on Facebook, I'm just Laurie C. Williams. The name of my training facility is Pup and Iron Canine Enrichment Center. And we are in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We have a Facebook page. You can join that as well. So I do hope to hear back, get some feedback from you guys. I hope you enjoy this podcast and I look forward to many, many more with you guys. Take care.